committee and to work through hearing requests, et cetera, for bills. I'll just quickly run through the things that I have heard over the course of the summer. One item is regarding bear permits. You know, we seem to be constantly changing the bear permit system. We ran into a problem in the Boundary Waters where folks were putting the Boundary Waters down as their second choice, and then they didn't get drawn. And what has happened in the past is that those Boundary Waters permits were never spoken for, and the outfitters were able to sell them up in that country after the drawing occurred. Now people, because they rank a choice, were putting down the Boundary Waters, and not, I think that many people didn't realize that when they hunt bear in the Boundary Waters, they have to do it without motors, without boats, without ATVs, without pickups, and the like. And now that's something I'd like to see happen, all those motorized use in the Boundary Waters. But since it's not going to happen, I think we need to take a different look at how those bear permits are done in terms of the selection process. And there was a real economic hardship, and I think the department understood that when it happened. There was, and it wasn't their fault really at all, but there was a real economic hardship. I know that some outfitters that were selling 20 to 25 bear hunts in the course of a year had only a couple of bear hunts that year. So you can see how that could be a big economic hardship. And one of the things that I would like to hear from the DNR when we do talk about this is how many of the permits that were the second choice in the Boundary Waters actually got sold. If people got the right to get the permit as their second choice, did people actually really buy them? We don't know if they could, we really don't know, even if they bought them, if they used them. But I think that, as I said earlier, some people found out that hunting in the Boundary Waters isn't as easy. You notice Representative Tao isn't here, so he's probably still trying to get into the Boundary Waters to find a place to put his new baiting barrel, right?
Crossbow.
Yeah, with a crossbow. Okay, then another item that I had brought to me is regarding a lake in western Minnesota, regarding some crappie closings where people are fishing on the in where there's a high concentration of crappies, and we're going to hear from the DNR. Mr. Bogus knows that we've been talking about that during a period of time when their crappies are most vulnerable, and there's been a lot of citizen input and involvement in getting that crappie population, as I understand it, up to where it is today. And they're talking, they would like to have that area, small area, protected during that vulnerable time. And that will be a discussion that we'll have. There are places in Minnesota, and the commissioner, as I understand it, has the right to close certain areas during spawning and vulnerable times. And in fact, on my lake at home in Crane Lake, there's a spawning area at the Vermilion Gorge that's routinely closed for the walleye spawn at the very opening of the fishing season. And as I understand, this is around a culvert or something where there's current and the crappies congregate there. I don't know all the details, but it's something that we'll be coming up to. We also have some issues on roadkill and who gets the policy on roadkill and who gets the first shot at the antlers and the balance of the deer. And, you know, Representative Cornish is real knowledgeable in this, and this is a bit of a thorny issue, or a horny issue, I should say, especially when it has to do with the bucks and getting the horns off the bucks. So we'll be dealing with that. Also, the Trappers Association has had a very, very long laundry list of things that we want to have, that they would like to have changed in the trapping rules and regulations and how things are effectuated in trapping. And in looking at that long list, it'd be a little aggressive and a little difficult to make a lot of the changes for budgetary constraints and some practicality matters. And so we are going to take a look at three or four of their items that seem like they're doable, and we'll have a bill or we'll have at least some discussion on those points. And one of them are when the one item is when the fox raccoon season would open. They're proposing that it open a week earlier, and that otter and beaver trapping run concurrently. And I believe that has to do with the incidental take of otter. That when they're beaver trapping and there's not a season on the otter because they're not running concurrently. I think this is how that works. Then they, you know, an otter gets in the trap and then they essentially have taken an otter. And then there's all kinds of different things, requirements that they have to do in notifying the conservation officer what do you call Representative Cornish when you tender the trap, how you tender the trap. And I don't know that much about it, but we're going to learn about it and see if we can make some kind of mid-course corrections to help the Trappers Association out. And another item is regarding the incidental take of muskrats also during the same period of time. They have some issues with that. And so we'll take a look at that item. And then another item that has really come front and center this year is I have had probably more input to me about this issue, regardless of where I've been in the state, is over the timber wolf and the management of the timber wolf and the number of timber wolves, the perceived or actual impact it's having on deer herds, on cattle, you know, all various livestock. And I would say that for this is the first time. I mean, I live in an area that hasn't always been that in love with wolves, but this has really grown to a lot of places in the state where people have said, you know, this is like almost out of control, or is out of control, and what are your plans for the wolf? And I know the DNR has some ideas, and we're going to talk about that this year and see where that might lead us. So those are just kind of a general overview of the things as the chair that I've see, one of the things I think we need to remember is that we're going to be talking about streamlining of youth licensing and how we can have a better track of youth entering the system. We're going to be talking about lowering the age of people who can hunt, youth that can hunt. And we're going to be talking about how we get them into the system so that we have so we actually have the demographic information, rather than just some kind of a broad scattergun idea of what it is, and figure out what fees are going to be associated with the youth licensing, how that we are going to get them into the system regarding if they don't have social security numbers when they, you know, if they will have their own, as I understand it, their own ID that travels with them for their life with the DNR. And so that's another issue that I think we're going to be looking at, streamlining youth licensing. Now, I have to tell you that when the DNR comes to me and says we're going to streamline the youth licensing, I think about more regulations, not less regulations, because, you know, we've been through some streamlining in the past, and it seems like we end up with more complicated, but we can hear from them about that as well. So then with that, I think that pretty well covers what one more item that I had on my list was we're going to be revisiting the bear baiting issue with the barrel. If you remember last year in the House bill, we had a bill that permitted the bear baiting with a barrel on private property, property labeled and chain, properly labeled by the hunter, his address and et cetera, and chained to a tree, as I recall. And we're going to be revisiting that as well. And I had the opportunity to go on a couple. I'm in Canada a lot these days, and I had an opportunity to be on some bear hunting sites where they were using a barrel that was chained to a tree. These happened to be plastic barrels, and I didn't see where it was that onerous of a provision, but I mean, it's something that we can discuss. It was in the bill. It fell out in conference committee last year. So there may be a few other items. One thing I'd like to say is that we're going to be focusing on things that don't cost money. And I think that should be a goal of the committee, to do things that the best of our, and that youth licensing issue might end up to be a cost problem. If we do some changing of the youth licensing, it might end up costing money. And we're going to try and work at things that don't cost money, because my read on this place is that we really don't have any money to spend. So the rest of you, what issues? And you just go around the table and give your thoughts, and we'll get out of here. And maybe we'll hear from the DNR for a moment if they'd like to address us. I see Mr. Bogus is here. And then we'll get organized for the coming weeks with what we're going to be doing specifically. Representative Hackbar.
I've got that duck decoy bill that passed this committee and was in the bill when it left the House and got taken off the conference committee. I'll bring that back.
That would be fine with me. Who else? Rick, Representative Hansen.
If we can maybe get some update. Today there were some things happening with the CARP that the federal government announced, and I don't really have any legislation, but if we could get an update on what's going on at the federal level and maybe even from the AG's office on the various lawsuits relating to CARP, might be an informational thing that could occur later on in the session, but it would be helpful to get that. And then I've been working with the Conservation Federation on some mowing issues, so we're trying to, relating to stormwater ponds and delaying mowing around those ponds. So we don't have a bill yet, but trying to do some research on that.
Where could we as a committee, who has I have never seen an Asian carp in the wild. Who here has? So we've got a whole committee that hasn't really ever seen these, other than a video. We haven't seen this problem, and it is an absolute problem. So maybe one of the things we should figure out is where we work, Representative Hansen or someone working, or the department, where can we go view these carp and see them? Where they, like they show the video of them. You want to come down, Ed, Mr. Bogus? You know, I've seen a video where the guy, where someone's going down the river in a boat, and they're jumping in all directions, and they're huge. Hopefully that's not in Minnesota.
I'd like to know if we, what he thought about shooting a carp when they jump up. I've seen a good video on that. That guy posted in front of the shotgun, they were flying, it was pretty cool.
Well, I think that could be something that we could promote in a bill.
Raise some money.
Now that we got uncased.
Yeah, we could got uncased firearms in a motor vehicle, and we could sell a license to take carp. But if they shoot them, they're going to have to pick them up. I mean, we couldn't just leave them away. That'd be wanton waste. Anyway, Mr. Bogus, what do you know about the carp?
Mr. Chair and members, Ed Bogus, for the record, from the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Fish and Wildlife. And although we found a few Asian carp in the Mississippi River and Minnesota waters, the videos that you're talking about are the wing shooting of carp flying out of the water as the boats are going through. Those types of concentrations right now, the closest place you could go see those would be Illinois, some of the Illinois River tributaries to the Mississippi River in that area. And of course our invasive species and fisheries people are very concerned about this issue, as I think all the citizens of the state should be. So we could certainly put together more information for the committee if you'd like on this topic. As Representative Hansen mentioned, it's also the Attorney General's office, governor's offices are getting involved in this issue in the whole Great Lakes area because of finding of DNA of Asian carp in Lake Michigan has escalated the concern of this issue. There's not proof of Asian carp in the Great Lakes, but they've gotten awfully close in the Chicago area if they have not gotten into Lake Michigan. So they're obviously a very a very prolific invasive species that could have a tremendous negative impact on a lot of our native fish in the state. So we're very concerned about it.
Well, it would be, since there's a moratorium on out-of-state travel, that pretty well ends any chance that we go there, and we don't have the budget to do that anyway for everybody to go down to Chicago and stay at the Drake Hotel on the Illinois River where the fish are at. But it would be helpful to have some additional information on it, particularly how that, at least for me, how that DNA business is working and what that means.
We could certainly, our invasive species and fishery staff could provide. They're keeping pretty close tabs on what's going on in that area, so they could certainly provide some information, or we could probably contact some of the folks in those states if you wanted information directly from some of those states. We've already helped assist the state of Illinois with getting the quantity of rotenone that they needed for the big rotenone project that they just did down there in the Sanitary Canal area. So we could certainly work to get the information. It wouldn't be like seeing it firsthand, but we could get the information.
Okay, and while we're he's up here, who else has an item? Representative McNamara, did we get the three pheasants last year, didn't we?
Yeah, we've had that for a couple of years now, Mr. Chair. So, thank you.
That isn't what your issue this year.
I'm moving on. I'm with it. I just have a couple things. Minnesota, we require waterfowl to have both the wing and the head in transporting, and I guess I have talked with Mr. Bogus and Mr. Conrad about that, and I think we should look at being like other states where it does not require both of those. Mm-hmm. And then one other one, I did talk again with Mr. Bogus about this a little bit, but we don't, I think, are not real clear in all the state game refuges. We don't allow the taking of non-game animals necessarily, specifically coyotes. We happen to have a game refuge in my area that has a lot of coyotes in the area, and there's a rather large area, then they can't go in there for it. I guess I'd just like to hear why it's a game refuge and that's a non-game animal. Maybe it would make sense. And there's been some misunderstanding with folks because of the way the signs read and stuff. They assume they can hunt coyotes, and we want to get along with our local CO, so we're making sure we're doing the right thing.
Well, we're going to have a coyote day, and maybe we should have that at the same time we have the wolf day. I know that there's a bill that was introduced today or the first day of session that had to do with coyotes and bounties by Representative Coonan. And maybe we'll focus in on the coyotes that day and have some information on that and then hear that bill on the same day.
And if I can, Mr. Chair, still, in regards to the Timberwolf, I do hope the DNR comes forward with the discussion, because as I read in the paper over the weekend, they are hunting them in the western states and taking significant numbers of them and not impacting the population beyond the goals that they have. So I think we should have a discussion when we see the day when the state gets to regulate them in the state instead of the feds, that we're realistic. And do we really want timber wolves in the northern suburbs and Representative Murdoch's area where they're trying to grow sheep and other small animals, and they got dogs and stuff? I think we should keep the timber wolves up in your area, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, just 1 second. I want to ask a question on that. On the wolf issue, Mr. Bogus, my recollection of the wolf agreement that was either tried to be crafted with the feds between the state, that there was, even when the wolf was delisted and brought over to state control, that the state had agreed to 5 years no hunting. And can you refresh my memory and the rest of the committee members about that agreement, and where does that stand, and how is that, what enforcement is there of that if it were given to us?
Mr. Chair and members, the The department back in the late 90s, as the delisting of wolves appeared to be imminent, which it wasn't, but at that time it looked like it was about to occur. We did a roundtable process with all the interests surrounding the wolf issue, and that roundtable came to some consensus agreements that we then brought to the legislature in the form of a plan, and that plan didn't pass the first year that we brought it here, but it did pass the second year with some amendments to it. But essentially what happened was that the key elements of the state's wolf plan that required changes in laws or authorities were brought to the legislature and passed. I think it was in the year 2000, but it might have been 2001. And included in that was a law that said the state would not have a wolf hunt for 5 years following delisting. And the rationale for that was that when any species is delisted, there's a 5-year, what they call post-delisting monitoring period, in which the federal government can very easily relist. After that 5-year post-delisting monitoring, they have to start from square one and go back through the full listing process. So the thinking at the time was that it would be prudent to get through that 5-year post-delisting monitoring period before considering a season. So it's actually, Mr. Chairman, not really in agreement with the federal government. Wow. It's a state statute that says the commissioner will not establish a wolf season for 5 years following delisting, and will conduct public meetings or something like that prior to having a season. So it's not a federal requirement, or it's not necessarily any sort of binding agreement. It could cause concern, the federal government to become concerned, depending on how such a season might be structured. But there's no, as the Western states illustrate, there's no prohibition on having a hunting season. The thing that states have to do once they assume management authority is assure that the survival of the wolf is going to be assured. So it isn't, it's a state law. Okay. It's kind of unique to our state.
Okay, that was my next question. That was my follow-up question is do the Western states, did they agree, do they have any such 5-year?
Mr. Chair, no, they don't. I would just for the committee's benefit, point out that there is a pending lawsuit in the West that hasn't been decided yet that's basically challenging the delisting in the West. And no one knows, of course, what the outcome of that lawsuit's going to be. But they basically started hunting, you know, within a year or two after delisting.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Boggess, if I could ask, Didn't we actually delist it once and we agreed back? I'm wondering if when we do have the discussion, would that go? I wonder if we could interpret those 5 years to be back when we delisted it a year or two ago anyway.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, yes, it's actually been delisted twice in the last few years, once for about 18 months and then again just this past year for a few months. Whether that would count towards the 5 years, was that the question? Sure. And I think that would be a matter of interpretation, I guess.
Well, Representative McNamara, maybe what we should do is as we look at this issue, is amend that to include that period of time, that statute. If we did keep a period of time, we would amend it to include the time served, the 18 months or whatever it was, plus the couple of months to count as credit towards whatever the actual amount of time is. Interesting idea. Representative Murdoch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that's probably the biggest concern I have in my district, besides two-line fishing, which people really wanted up there. They're doing a lot of damage. And I can't remember the name of the conservation officer I talked to, but he thought, his thoughts are there's more wolves up there in our district than what they're being counted. And they are doing damage, so it's a hot issue up there. And mm-hmm. Representative Saylor, you probably had the same phone calls.
Remarkably, no.
No, really. That's you know, different area. Maybe you know, you have more woods or whatever. But it's I've had a number of phone calls in the last 2 months and conversations on the street with farmers and everything. So it's an important issue. We have to regulate them.
Okay. Who else?
I've received some feedback from constituents on several of the lakes in my district are restricted for spearing, and looking into that. So don't know where it's going to go. Got some preliminary discussions with the DNR.
Are you talking about northern spearing of the size limit, the slot limit on the?
Just banned.
Banned.
It's banned on several lakes in my district, and local folks want it back.
Does Mr. Bogus know?
I've had a preliminary with Mr. Meyer. I haven't spoken with Mr. Bogus.
I'd say that you ought to talk to Mr. Bogus about that, so we can kind of flesh out the reasoning for that. You know, we've had a lot of discussion about the site. Last year we actually had in our bill, I believe, the Anzell provision that eliminated the slot, which didn't make it through conference, but we didn't have anything about any banning of the taking of northern.
Yeah, it's been banned for it's a muskie deal.
Yes.
Yeah. And
well, I can assure you that when we start talking about that, we will hear from the muskie folks.
I'm very confident we will.
They're very good lobbyists here. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just an idea that was brought to me by a constituent, but when dealing with state passes or trail passes for like cross-country skis or bikes, a question was raised, why can't we put like a 5-year endorsement on a driver's license to simplify that process? Thought that was a good idea that warrants discussion. And actually, I was just up in your neck of the woods in January and got to experience some cross-country skiing. But also the fact that you can only get a day pass, or at least how the people selling licenses at the gas station were explaining it, you had to have a driver's license. Or if one of our party members had forgot their driver's license because they weren't driving or for whatever purpose, they weren't able to get a cross-country pass, maybe there's a like a temporary day pass you could just purchase without having to go and swipe your license, just so they could get out on the trails. And I think that should be a pretty non-controversial issue.
Representative Saylor, you're frowning. What is your frown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'm looking at some things with regard to cross-country ski passes again, and it doesn't particularly I think fall within the purview of this committee, so I wasn't going to bring it up, but I think Representative Falk and I can certainly discuss that.
Yeah, that would seem like a bill introduced there would be traveling into Representative Wagenius's Finance Committee, Policy and then Finance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, Representative Cornish.
I got a list.
Whole uncased there.
Some things I hope we don't see is more change on the shining law. I hope they just leave that alone for a while, all the bickering quit, and see if, you know, what develops. Hopefully nothing on crossbows, but I can't guarantee the Saitow isn't going to do something. Scopes on muzzleloaders, I hope we don't see that. I hope we don't see any more changes with deer quality management. The decoy placement, I think Pat Barth had a good idea in addressing that again and trying to get that changed through on overnight. Hopefully no assaults on hunting by PETA. And
is that people eating tasty animals?
Yeah. And then loosening up in the spearing laws, I was at the Dark Horse Anglers Association banquet the other night, and they were voicing the same thing. Cass Lake, they specifically mentioned that the ban there, and then the slot limit problem. And so a bunch of good folks, I hope they come in front of us and testify. And then maybe I've heard a number of complaints from people that think we should raise a non-resident hunter fee, and maybe that's how we can balance and get some money for the getting more youth in. I don't know, but there is some concern that we're not charging enough for the non-resident. We go other places and get hit pretty hard. So that's my wish list.
Okay. Is Cass Lake one of your lakes? I would almost bet on it. Considering that's close to home, you probably hear about it quite a bit. Anyone else? Mr. Bogus, you have anything you want to talk to us about?
Mr. Chair and members, I could just list some topics that we anticipate being in the DNR's Game and Fish proposal. I would just, before I do that, mention that I'm not sure if it comes to this committee or Representative Eakin's committee, but I know Representative Purcell is interested in the wild rice issues, and we've been working with a group on some wild rice stuff that'll either come here or to Representative Eakin's committee. But on the game and fish bill, we're working on some provisions for certifying fish collectors for disease testing. It's kind of a new thing with all the testing requirements for VHS. There's a shortage of people that are certified to collect the fish. It's almost like you have to maintain a chain of evidence of where the fish came from till they get to the lab. And so we're doing some training, but we just need some additional authorities to certify people that have gotten that training. And there's a few other miscellaneous things on fish health inspections. We'd like to revisit the aquarium issue if we get VHS in Minnesota waters, something that we brought up a few years ago. Youth can legally transport fish now for aquarium use, and often we think they end up getting released again, and it could be a source of spreading disease. Some technical things, one on criteria for obtaining sucker eggs for the aquaculture industry. Right now that's tied to how many acres of wetlands they have licensed. We'd like to decouple that because there's a lot of concern about acreage of wetlands, and we think some of what's being licensed is being driven by the sucker egg quotas. Plus now there's an additional fee for aquaculture that's tied to the acreage of wetlands that's on the license, and so we just think it would be good to get away from tying the amount of sucker eggs that are allocated to various aquaculturists to the acreage of wetlands that are in their license. We've got also on the more technical side some obsolete planning statutes for fish and wildlife planning, some technical or more clarifying restrictions on bait harvest equipment being used commercially or being used in infested waters for harvesting bait and then being used in other waters. Provision on taking minnows in wildlife management lakes. There are a few lakes in the state, shallow lakes, that have been designated for wildlife management. Looking at some additional authorities there. Some fairly technical things on license refund process and criteria to basically make it easier to give refunds when people get a license that they weren't required by law to have. Provision.
I thought we took care of that last year. We did something about if it was a duplicate license.
Right. We've done a little bit of it, but there's still the I don't want to get into too much detail here tonight, but the biggest issue is someone who got, maybe was in the military, either got discharged or was home on leave and purchases a license to hunt or fish, and they don't need that license under state law. So we just like to make it clear we can refund their fee. Wildlife land acquisition process, looking at how appeal of a denial is handled. Baiting and feeding issues, which have been pretty prominent the last year. We're going to have some ideas dealing with that. Elk license, we'd like to allow for a preference for getting elk licenses, not a full preference like we have for most of our drawings, but like we have for moose, where people that have been unsuccessful many times would get an added chance of drawing a license above those who are just applying the first few times. Another provision related to elk that are causing damage or nuisance to be able to issue a license to a hunter to shoot those elk rather than a shooting permit, and not having that count against their once-in-a-lifetime elk hunt. Some technical changes surrounding dove hunting, some things that are relate to getting in conformity with federal transportation requirements, shooting hours, things like that. Eurasian collared doves are a non-native species that are showing up in the state. Currently they're protected because they're not listed as unprotected birds. Simplifying some turkey license issuance so we could go to more over-the-counter rather than through drawings like we've done for the archery in the late season. Clarifying that we last year did a provision on fishing in state parks without a license, but it We didn't make it clear that that applied to ice fishing, so we'd just like to make that clear. Looking at some definitions of accompanied for the purposes of hunting, and that's kind of tied to some changes in the apprentice license, which the apprentice provision allows a person to, right now under current law, it's a person who otherwise would be required to have firearm safety, gets a one-time exemption through an apprentice where if they're accompanied, they can go hunting and then they need to fulfill their firearm safety prior to going hunting again if a license is required for that hunting. We'd like to extend that to include, right now it's small game and deer. We'd like to extend it to bear hunting and also go to twice in a lifetime, so that if something, they have a bad experience or something goes wrong with being able to hunt that first year, they've got one more opportunity. Some technical changes on who can certify medical evidence for obtaining disability permits, some standardization of how high stands can be for big game hunting. Right now there's different heights for different types of big game hunting. Dealing with the second choice bear application, this is the same issue, Mr. Chair, that you had referenced earlier. There may be a variety of ways to get at that, but we would propose going away from the second choice, which had the unintended consequence of eliminating the surplus bear licenses. Revisiting the issue of shooting grouse near motor vehicles, that was repealed a couple of years ago. We're hearing more and more from people concerned about shooting grouse off trails and things like that. The duck season opening framework, there's a state law that prohibits Minnesota from opening earlier than the Saturday nearest October 1st. The federal framework actually allows a week earlier than that. We're hearing more conversation. We're not sure if we use the authority, if we could get it back, but we'd at least like to have that authority so that we could have that discussion, mostly for early migrants like wood duck, teal, and things like that. Some authority for mid-season fishing adjustments in the 1837 ceded territory where we have to decide well ahead of time how, if we need to restrict, how to restrict, and sometimes we could be less restrictive and still stay within the state's quotas, but we don't have the kind of nimble type authority that we need to do something that quickly. So we'd like to get something that would deal with that issue specifically that would allow publication in the state register. Sturgeon tagging technical change relating to one tag per year, and then some authority to allow, right now you can't use game fisher parts, we'd like some limited authority to allow game fish eggs and certain, do rules on allowing game fish eggs, particularly the spawn bags for steelhead fishing. So that's probably not quite a complete list, but it's a pretty comprehensive list of what the department's considering for a game and fish proposal, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. As he was going through the list, one of the things that I encountered this year during the waterfowl hunting season was down in the special goose hunt between like the 12th and the 22nd of December, the late season hunt in the south where the limit is 5. Yeah, my son and I had the opportunity to go down with Representative Gunther and have a very successful 3-day hunt. It was really great. And all really fabulously sized geese and quite good. Real good experience, except that we arrived in their community late in the afternoon on Friday and found that a significant area of a significant rural area along the outside edges of town, and we're talking sections of land here, square miles, would be on, unbeknownst to us, were within the city limits. At one point, you couldn't see the city or the buildings of the city at one particular place where we wanted to hunt. And when I went to the farmer's house to ask permission to hunt in a cornfield, he said, well, I'd be glad to have you hunt, but you're going to have to get permission from the city. And I looked at him, I said, from the city, what do you mean? He says, well, we're in the city limits. And I said, okay, well, how do I do that? He says, well, you have to go down City Hall and get a permit. So I beat it downtown, and it was 5 o'clock already. And there, so then I went to the police department, and I said, where is, I need a permit to hunt out on John's farm out there, 3 miles west of town, or 2 miles west of town, whatever the distance was. And he said, well, the only person that can give that permit is the city administrator, and he won't be back till Monday morning at 8 o'clock. So this is the ironic thing about this. So we wrote that field off. And for those who goose hunt or duck hunt in a field, cornfield, you know that you just don't go out as a rule and set up in a field your decoys. You find where they're feeding, and then you set up in there so that they come back to that same spot. Well, so we were driving around the community, and here was a field, a cornfield, that was immediately adjacent to the Capitol, as close as from here to the Sears building. Did I say the Capitol? Sorry. The hospital. Sorry about that. From here to the Sears, the hospital was about from here to the Sears building. And there was a blacktop road that divided the cornfield from the hospital property. And so I said, oh, there would be a great field. And our guide said, well, geez, that's not in the city limits. So we went and got permission from the farmer, and we hunted 3 mornings and killed a limit for 4 people each morning for 3 mornings in that field while we watched the ambulance back up to the ambulance entrance. But yet 2 to 3 miles away, we couldn't hunt because that was within the city limits. It just was the way that the twist of the city limits ran, that this road had always been the edge of the city limits. And it just seems to me that that's going a little bit overboard, and that we should be thinking about having some kind of something. They need to make some accommodations for someone so that the chief of police or someone, the police department, the object of that whole exercise is so that if someone is out there shooting and they believe it's in the city limits, which I don't think even most people would know that the hunting was going on out there, we're in these fields where we're looking at, and someone calls the police department and says, there's somebody over across the street or in that field shooting, they could know that there was a permit issued and there's hunters in there. I think that's what the intent is. But it really puts a crimp on. And I went to the watering hole that night, a subject came up, and there's plenty of people that don't like that. And it just inhibits the ability of people to get at the hunting. So whether or not we do anything about it, we've contacted a couple of cities where there's a real concentration of waterfowl in the south. And one city, as I recall, handles it pretty well, and the other city handles it real well when there's normal business hours for the city. So maybe we might hear something on that too. But I'm sure that, the other thing is about when we were hunting there is that, there are rules and regulations in place that require you to be so many feet from a building or structure or from a populated area or roads, and we observe those even in that field across the street from the hospital, and we're able to do that quite readily. So, and no one said a word to us in 3 days. So they certainly wouldn't have said a word to us 3 miles out of town. Nonetheless, anyone else? Rita, Representative Saylor.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I just wondered what you have against the home field advantage for the local people who could go down and get their permits as opposed to people coming from out of town.
Well, that's an interesting question, because we hunted there for 3 days and we didn't see anybody that was looking for a home field advantage. The only people that were hunting with us were the 2 people that were the Gunthers. And otherwise, we never heard a shot or saw another hunter. So, but that would be a home field, so-called home field advantage, right? Anyway, anyone else? All right, next Monday, right?
Yeah.
Oh, we had to approve some minutes from the last meeting a year ago, April 6th. April 6th, and Representative Saylor, you were in attendance. Have you reviewed the minutes, or are you prepared to make a motion to accept the minutes of April 6th?
Mr. Chair, I have and I am.
All right, Representative Saylor moves. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.